Welcome to Parents Perspective. I'm not going, pouted 5-year-old Jenny, stamping her foot. But you'll love it, sweetie, her mom cajoled. Your friends Maddie and Benji will be there, too. Kindergarten will be fun. I'm not going, Jenny repeated for emphasis, plopping herself down on the bottom step in her hallway. Her mom sat down beside her. What's wrong? She began. Are you worried about something? Jenny hugged her favorite doll and looked down at the floor. Why do I have to go to kindergarten? I liked my school. I don't need a new school. Well, her mom began. Why, Jenny interrupted, do I have to do something different? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about today's kindergartens? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is a kindergarten expert. Dr. Geraldine Daniel is Deputy Executive Director of the National Association for the Education of Young Children, or NAEYC. Dr. Daniel previously served as Chair of Psychology and Education and Associate Professor in the Applied Developmental Psychology Program in the School of Education at the University of Pittsburgh. Dr. Daniel was a child care center director for 18 years and has written a series of articles on transitions for infants, toddlers, and difficult children in child care. She holds a B.S. in political science and M.S. in child development and a Ph.D. in education from the University of Pittsburgh. She has 2 grown children and 4 grandchildren. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Daniel.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
What's the difference between kindergarten a dozen or so years ago and kindergarten today?
Well, not so long ago, the traditional kindergarten was thought to be more for building a child's social skills, kind of helping them get to know the institution of school. And that was the impetus for it. And not so many years ago, teachers had class size of 30 or so children regularly. Increasingly, in the ensuing years, what we now have is smaller class sizes, and we now know so much more about what young children are capable of. In the old days, people thought 5-year-olds were too immature to be in school all day. We now know that it is possible to be in school longer and to indeed have high-quality learning experiences. In today's environment, we now have kindergarten situations that are much more diverse. You have affluence sitting next to severe poverty. You have children who come into the classroom for whom English is not their first language. We have children who learn in various ways. We know a little more about the difficulties that some children have learning, dyslexia and so forth. A dozen or so years ago, you might rarely have ever see a child with disabilities, visible disabilities, in the classroom. You see more of that now. And so kindergartners are much more diverse, smaller class size, but more diverse.
How would you say kindergarten is significant in terms of the whole structure of our current educational system? It used to be, as you said, you know, learn to share, learn to cut with scissors, you know, sit down when you're told. Is there a difference now in what we expect of a kindergarten?
Very much so. Very much so. Because science in the various disciplines, math, literature, science, and technology, all of those things have advanced. And so we know more about what a child can and should know to successfully conquer those disciplines, if you will. And given that, then we know that we've got to reshape kindergarten. We have reshaped kindergarten. We live in an age of high accountability. Everybody wants to know that the schools are producing, if you will. What's happening to the kindergarten, which many people are very concerned about, is in this age of accountability, kindergarten is being squished. Squished between preschool experiences and the first grade through 12th grade, say. And so now instead of kindergarten being valued in its own right, it seems to be more, well, kindergarten is a time to get you ready for first grade, to get you ready so that you're an affluent reader by third grade, to get you ready for school success. And actually, it takes my breath away just to say it.
It's a very big change, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Some of it, you know, some of it for the good, because we know more about what children can do. But what's not for the good are things like high-stakes testing to see whether or not you can even get into kindergarten. Things like, I refer to it as drill and kill, you know, where everything is broken up into small segments and you must learn these skills in a regimented kind of way. That's the side of accountability, that pressure side, that is not a good thing. But as long as parents and teachers and school administrators remember that this is a child, a five-year-old at a developmental level where they're still learning in hands-on kinds of ways, and they're also capable of constructing much of their own knowledge if we give them time to do that. They still learn through play. And so it's good and it's bad, you know, but it isn't everything.
It's interesting. A very famous educator, John Holt, used to say, I'm going to mangle this quote, I'm sure, but the idea is if we tried to teach children to walk and talk the way we're teaching them in school some of the other subjects, they never learn.
Mangled or not, I get it.
I haven't been in a kindergarten classroom in a very long time. How would you describe the goings-on in an ideal kindergarten?
Oh, in an ideal kindergarten, you have a teacher who understands first and foremost that she must build a relationship with the children in her room, that relationships are paramount. Young children learn when they feel connected and supported by the adult in the classroom or even in the home if it's a parent. But that relationship is very, very important. And so a really good teacher building on those relationships, I mean, she knows when a child is having an off day, and she modifies for that individual child to help that child be able to get the most out of that day, even though it may be an off day for him. This is a teacher who builds what we in early childhood education called a community of learners. And what's meant by that is her classroom, and I'll say her because that's primarily who kindergarten teachers are, her classroom is one in which no single individual has all the right answers, not even the teacher. Mm-hmm. She's learning along with them. She's open to their ideas. And she approaches the curriculum in such a way that there's room for children to dig into it, to have some ahas, and to be delighted with the learning that they're able to do themselves, to initiate. In an ideal kindergarten, the teacher does what's called scaffolding. That means she looks at a child and what they're doing and trying to figure out and gives a little nudge, a little help, a suggestion, offers a prop or a toy or a utensil, you know, pen, marker, whatever it is, makes a suggestion that then sends the child scurrying in a direction that augments or pushes forward their learning. So a little thing like perhaps the children have been outside and some little guy has discovered earthworms in the garden. And he's got it, you know, holding it up, you know, and it's wiggling around. And he's got all kinds of questions about it. And this kindergarten teacher is one who might say, well, you know what? We've got an encyclopedia. This is an age-appropriate encyclopedia. You can go. Let's see if we can find out what kind of worm this is. Other children may be interested in this as well. And so they start describing the worm and its features. And she moves a pen or marker in and a piece of paper, and they have a chance to write down the adjectives that they're coming up with, their descriptions. Are they spelling those words correctly? Probably not. But they're sounding them out. They are inventing their own engagement with the worm, with writing, with literacy. They're excited about it, and she's encouraging this. It may become a story. It may become, you know, let's look to see where worms live, and they build a habitat. All kinds of things can happen as a result of the gentle nudging of a teacher who's got a relationship with children and knows that there's real value to their discovery of the knowledge that's out there.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on kindergarten.
As regular listeners know, Parents Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Fall is our major fundraising season, and we appreciate your support. Contributions can be sent to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015, and we thank you.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Jerlene Daniel about kindergarten. There's a whole issue now about language-based thought as opposed to visual stimulus-based thought and all that kind of thing. Is this where kindergarten can really convince children and parents that language-based thought is really significant for their academics?
In my mind, when you're talking about parents and children, because that's really where the first learning takes place, parents prepare children for their thought processes and how they understand the world by the conversations they have with them, the one-on-one conversations, really listening to what a child's got to say, by asking questions. In all of these exchanges, as well as reading aloud to the child and talking about the book or the text that's there, in these ways, children learn the nuances of language. So often, adults think that they need to talk down to children and use their most basic, essential vocabulary that the adult has. And I just think it's important to set adults free and tell them to use the full extent of their vocabularies. If you're eating a piece of chocolate cake, as an adult, it's not appropriate to just say it's yummy. You're talking to a child. It's scrumptious. It's delectable. It's all those words that you have in your vocabulary. And people will say, well, how would a 5-year-old know? Or how would a 3-year-old know? They know because of the smile on your face. You've got chocolate on your mouth. You're it's clear what that word means. And there has been a study. It was a home and school study that a man named David Dickinson and a woman named Patton Tabers did, where they went into classrooms. These were preschool classrooms. And studied, documented the vocabulary and language use of the teacher. And what they found was that the children in the classrooms elevated their language to match that of the teacher. So children do what they hear modeled. And so if we're talking a language-rich environment, what's the language adults use? And these nuances of languages, the language that they learn with enhanced vocabulary, sentence structure, and so forth, that's how you get to, thinking clearly and really being able to use language.
What's the difference for children in an all-day versus a half-day kindergarten? There's a lot of controversy. There are a lot of different preferences among families.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me start by saying whether it's a half-day or all-day, the focus ought to be, is this a high-quality kindergarten? Is this a kindergarten where teachers are responsive to children, building relationships? Is this a kindergarten in a school that has been thoughtful about the curriculum it's chosen and the way that it assesses children to enhance learning and to help them know how to construct their instruction? You know, is this a thinking, reflective kind of place? Is this a place where the high energy of children can be spent? Minds on, hands on kind of learning. That can happen in a half day. That can happen in a full day. If you've got an atrocious kindergarten, you certainly don't want to double the time. As to what's best for children, I think in our society, we have two masters here. One is the child, and you certainly want the program to be developmental and meet the child's kindergarten needs. But you also have parental needs. We're in a society now where very often both parents are working or working and going to school, and they need full day. Some need half day and so on. So what's the parents' needs, and how can a community respond to the parents in that community, their needs? But however you respond to the adult need, it's got to be high quality for the child. One set of children that perhaps could benefit most from all-day kindergarten that's of high quality are low-income children who have not been in an environment where they have had the advantages of books in the home and opportunities to write and excursions with the family to the zoo and other places. In many communities, preschool programs, child care tries to can do some things to fill that gap. But unfortunately, there's a lot in our society that differentiates a child's experience in school based on the income of the family. That's just one of those hard facts of life.
Can you give an example of that?
Well, there's a, let's take language and literacy. We have known for years that vocabulary is a very important predictor of later success in reading and writing. You know, it goes back to what I was talking about, the nuances of words and sentence structure and all of that. Two researchers, Hart and Riesley, a number of years ago, did a small study where they went into the homes of families who were receiving public assistance, working class families, and I believe the high income families were college professors. All right. And they recorded every word that transpired for about 2 different hours each week in all these homes. And what they found was that the number of words that a low income child heard was far fewer by thousands and thousands and thousands of words than the high income families. And the working class was in the middle somewhere. And so, for example, if the low income family heard 30,000 words, the high income family's child heard 50,000 words. A big gap. School is not an equalizer. If you go to the schoolhouse door with that kind of gap in your vocabulary, when you get to school that's building and taking off on this vocabulary and these experiences you've been having, the gap just grows. Isn't that kind of scary?
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
It's scary. And then those authors sat down and said, okay, well, if we were going to close this gap, how much time in a high-quality preschool would these children have to spend? Well, it was outrageous. It couldn't have been done. You wouldn't have eaten or slept. And so it just speaks to how we as parents all along need to pay attention to the social context of our communities. I mean, our children, whether we're high-income or low-income, are going to be all in this together. How do we make it so that every child has a high quality experience? You really need to start before they get to school. And none of that is to say that if you're low income, you can never leap that barrier. Clearly, plenty of children do. All along the way, the various teachers children have, that's where it makes such a difference, because a teacher who cares about relationships and includes the family in that circle of relationships can form a good relationship with the child, a good relationship with the family. A teacher who believes in the potential of every child in her room, hey, it's magic.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on kindergarten.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, the popular Photers Guide by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Jerry Daniel about kindergarten.
Are there developmental issues that parents should consider in choosing a kindergarten, a half day or a full day or something like that?
Yes, I think so. But I think what I would say to parents is, know thy child. You know, who is this child as you know them? Now, all of us have been surprised by, you know, the child we thought we knew and what they do in public. You know, that's going to happen. But in making these decisions, for example, oh, I can remember when my children were little, and they are now in their 30s. For one child at one particular school, I had a choice between a teacher who was very, very traditional, whatever that meant at the time. You sit in your seat, you speak when spoken to, you know, that kind of thing, versus a classroom that was, the teacher was more open, more fluid in how she approached things. And what I knew about that particular child going into that situation was, well, now here's a bright little girl who is curious, who is a do-good child. I mean, she's not going to misbehave, all right? But she really needed a challenge. And I thought that the fluidity would give her the challenge she needed. And so that's what I wanted to have happen. My son, on the other hand, was someone who took advantage of all fluidity. How's that? Who had a way of making any environment his own, you know. And so on the one hand, that's a good thing, but he's also very charming. And my concern was, if he can charm the teacher, will he not, you know, make the best use of the freedom? And what's interesting about that is that one of the teachers that he responded best to while he was in grade school was a teacher that all the other parents were complaining about because they thought she was too hard, too firm about what she wanted done. But my son liked that. He liked knowing what was expected. And he performed with her. So it's more than half day, full day. It's who's the teacher? Mm-hmm. Go visit the classroom. Go talk to folks. If you've got choices, make them.
We just are assuming that children in all states go to kindergarten. Is there a situation where states do not require kindergarten?
Well, this is very interesting. Most states require that school districts offer kindergarten. That does not mean a child has to go. Is that interesting?
It's okay not to register your child for kindergarten.
That's right.
In some places.
That's right. It's okay not to. Only 14 states require that when children meet whatever the age cutoff is, that they go to kindergarten. 7 states do not require that school districts offer kindergarten. And I know Pennsylvania is one of them. That's where I'm most recently from. And even to this day, they're not requiring that school districts offer it. Some 34 states require that schools offer at least half day. And only 9 states require that school districts offer full day.
Do you have some suggestions for preparing a child for kindergarten?
Yes, I think I do. I think I would say to parents, look around and see what it is you can afford to do, because money does come into play. What can you afford to do? What kind of environments can you put your child in, whether they're free or you have to pay for them, that allow your child plenty of opportunities to be sociable with his peers, to be put in situations where he has to figure out how to get what he wants, how to get along with others. Now, I'm not suggesting they do that without adult supervision. Obviously, there's a role for adults. But the child who has good social skills is a child who can be successful in school, because that's a child who knows when he needs something or needs an answer. And so he raises his hand and he asks, or he knows if he can't do it in the group, he knows to go to the teacher in other situations to get what he needs. And he can negotiate with other children. So those kind of social opportunities are important. And as I've said before, talking to the child, reading aloud to the child, playing little games of counting and all kinds of things like that without pressure. Those are all good preparatory situations.
I just wanted to follow up when we're talking about preparing a child for kindergarten. What about the practice, which seems to be very widespread, about holding a child back when he chronologically could go and just keeping him home?
Well, that's known as red shirting. And it's just what it means in sports. You're benched for a year. And some parents do that because they feel as though, and they do it particularly with boys, because they feel as though their sons will be more settled, more mature. I've even heard people say, well, when they get to high school, they'll be physically bigger and therefore, you know, be able to play the sports and so on. And they're really thinking long range and thinking about college admissions and all kinds of things such as that. And people do what they do. What can I tell you? But the fact of the matter is, in kindergarten, irrespective of whatever the age cutoff is, kindergartens typically have a full year's range of children in that classroom. That's who's there. And teachers have to figure out how to meet the needs of that range of children.
Dr. Daniel, what resources would you suggest for parents who want to study some of these issues further?
Well, at NAEYC... NAEYC stands for the National Association for the Education of Young Children. And we have just published a book this month called K Today, Teaching and Learning in the Kindergarten Year. I think that parents might find that book interesting because it does talk about language and math and science and all those kinds of things, and some of these other issues, policy issues as well.
How would they get their hands on that?
Well,
book?
They can go to the website, which is www.naeyc.org,
And the phone number for NAEYC is 1-800-424-2460.
Yes. There are also, in many towns across the country, NAEYC affiliates. So that might be the Omaha Association for the Education of Young Children. And often they carry the books and can get them for parents. But this one is hot off the press, so they might not be able to get it that way for a little while. But I would also suggest as a resource to parents that they go visit the school that they're planning to enroll their child in. Go visit, ask what materials they would suggest. Go sit in the classroom, see what goes on. Those are all ways of helping parents get their minds around what is this kindergarten experience and how do I think my child will fit in that experience.
Well, you have certainly helped us figure out an awful lot about the kindergarten experience. So from all the parents who are listening and all the caring adults, Dr. Jerlene Daniel, we thank you for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell everything that's not obvious. That helps us a lot. Mention show number 303 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you're tuning in. Our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Just scroll down to the topic or guest of your choice and click onto the words Listen to Podcast below. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.